I got back on the bike because I knew it would, it's just, it would make me happy. And I really wanted, ever since I was little, I've always really enjoyed proving people wrong. I hate to say it. I'm the type of person, I can own my mistakes. I have no shame, but I love being right. And I think that's a lot of people, you know?
Yep.
So I really enjoy proving people wrong. And especially just when the doctors were just sitting there and just telling me all these things that I wouldn't be able to do and the things that I was going to need help with.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Socket, and I am Van Tucker. If you're first joining, you may be wondering, what is The Socket? That's a very great question. The Socket is a podcast about featuring conversations with the global amputee community, with our mission to improve the quality of life of all amputees. Today, we have an incredible guest of Ikeana Clay, sharing her personal story from becoming the first female adaptive motor X competitor to snowboarding in the upcoming Paralympics. Without further ado, let's dive in with Kiana. Good morning. Welcome to The Socket. Really excited to have you here. You know, this is a very exciting episode because we got full of action sports. So, you know, we've interviewed a lot of individuals on our podcast that have done a lot of endurance running sports. You know, we've had guests that do action, like obstacle course running, but you're the first person that we have on the podcast that really does tons of action sports, not just one. You know, I was kind of checking out what you've done. You do motorcycles, skateboarding, snowboarding, surfing. You do like every single action sport out there. I'm not sure if there's an action sport that you don't do, but we'll find out. So welcome to The Socket here. How's your morning starting off?
Pretty good. How's yours?
Pretty sweet. It is Sunday morning today here and kicking off this with the podcast. That's pretty sweet. So
awesome.
You know, kind of just diving in here, you know, you do so many things, so I'd be kind of cool to kind of learn, how do you kind of, what's kind of your typical day look like, you know, since you kind of across so many different disciplines, how do you what's kind of like your typical day? Like, hey, I wake up in the morning, I want to go do something. How do you kind of choose what you're going to be working, like what sport you're going to be doing? And kind of tell us more about the sports you do as well.
Yeah. So my typical day really starts by what's going on outside. So if it's in the winter, I wake up at 5:30. I go to the gym till about 7:30. And then from there, I go directly to the mountain. I have to be there by 8. And then from 8 to 8:45, I get dressed, I get suited, I stretch, I get whatever I need to do to get ready to hit the hills. And then from 8 to usually about 1, 2 o'clock, I'm on the mountain training with my coach and my team. And then usually from like 2 to 3, we go get lunch. And then after that, we go to Woodward, which is a barn, at Copper Mountain, which is where our home mountain is. And that's where we train. That's like our home base. That's where our office is, whole shebang. Really grateful to be there. So then we go to Woodward and we're there from usually like 3 to 5, about 2 hours. It offers a lot of really great cross training because they have trampolines, foam pits, an indoor skate park, this huge ramp that you can send it into on a snowboard simulator so you can get familiar with being in the air, jumping, and just really work on all your techniques. Makes you a way better athlete. And then after that, I go home and I go to bed. So I usually have a pretty full day in the winter. And then in the summer, I work as much as I can because I save up for all the money that I need in the winter for living expenses and stuff. And so, again, it all depends on what's going on outside, because I live in Colorado, in Silverthorne, Colorado. So we still actually get some cold days in the summer. So I'll go ride my dirt bike if the weather's looking really nice. I'll do the whatever race series is going on locally. I travel around a lot for racing. I'm just now getting into flat track, which has been really cool. And I have my first big flat track race in California in November, so I just plan accordingly to that. And then with surfing, I'm on the world circuit for surfing, so that's pretty cool. Usually in the summer, I spend like at least a month in Hawaii, but I haven't been able to go this year because of COVID, and they're very strict about letting people in on the island. So I went ahead and just skipped that and just stuck to a lot of wake surfing, which adaptively wake surfing is getting huge. But I can really only do that in Texas because I don't know anybody out here in Colorado with a boat. So whenever I fly back home to see family and friends, we usually wake surf pretty much every day, all day. Because, you know, it's Texas. It's super, super hot. So going out there in the lake feels awesome. Getting refreshed. So that's always fun. And then I just started getting really into skateboarding. It's great cross training for snowboarding. It's another board sport. Keeps your brain like focused and like I said, just great cross training. And since it's something new, I'm molding my brain into more board sports. So it'll be even more well-rounded once I get back into the snowboarding season within a month.
Wow. Look at you. That is a lot. And that's pretty cool. you know, and we just kind of, you know, I kind of asked you this nice question. What's your day look like? Because I was so fascinated with all the things you do. So we dived into it, but let's kind of learn more, you know, for the, you know, the guests that are kind of listening in that may not know, never really know exactly who you are and what you do and your kind of story. So can you kind of share us your background and kind of your story of where you got to today and kind of how you kind of got into sports and kind of where got you into more of these adaptive action sports?
Yeah. So I grew up in Southern California, which is the mecca of action sports in general. And so I was always surrounded by, you know, action sports. And I always had the super need for speed. I always wanted to go fast. And my dad just looked at me one day and was like, well, you want to go super fast? Let's get you a dirt bike. So he ended up giving me my first PW80. And we took it out to Banning and we just rode it around on trails and stuff. And then he saw that I picked it up really fast, really well. And from there led to super minis and my whole career of just racing. And we ended up moving to Texas about probably when I was around 9 years old. And we moved out there and racing was really starting to get big in Texas. And so my dad was like, oh yeah, let's get super heavy into this. So every single weekend we were racing. Every day whenever I got back home from school, I would be practicing in the backyard because we lived on like an acre and a half of land. So I would practice my starts. I'd practice corners. My dad built this really cool like corner track, worked out, did the whole nine yards. And my whole plan was to turn pro when I was 16. And I had a bunch of sponsors and other people looking at me to turn pro. And I was at the top of my class doing super well, even in the male class. So that was really awesome. So I had this whole plan to turn professional and make this my like legitimate career of being a professional motocross racer. And that was when the Women's Motocross Association was its absolute biggest. So I had a lot of idols that I looked up to, a lot of really cool women like Tara Geiger, Ashley Feilick, the list goes on with that, but just really phenomenal woman. And that's what I wanted to be. And this one race, my dad took me to race at. It was at Freestone County Raceway. And it was really just a practice race before the next weekend because that was the big Women's Cup National that I was really training for. And so, you know, typical Texas, super, super stormy weather. It rained really hard for probably about 2-3 days before the race started. And it rained so bad that the mud was so cakey that people were getting stuck in the mud and blowing out their bikes. Like, it was bad. But with motocross, you race rain or shine, no exceptions. Like, that's just racing. So I went out there, and we were running late, got on the track super quick. And I got in this corner, and I just tipped over, nothing major. And that's where it kind of all started because since I tipped over in the mud, my complete bike was 100% covered in mud. So I had no traction, probably triple the weight of my bike, and I couldn't even get up. So I had to have two strangers jump the fence and they helped me up. So I continued on with my race and went over the finish line jump And whenever I landed, since I had no traction, my back tire slid out. And there was another rider right behind me. And he landed right on top of my neck and broke my neck. And so my nerves ripped out of my spinal cord. And so I couldn't, like, obviously I was knocked out. When he hit me, I guess I flew a couple feet in the air and I landed on my back. And I was wearing headphones because I listen to music when I ride. And when I got hit, my helmet flew off and my headphones flew up and ripped my eye on the side, which is now giving me Horner syndrome. So like my right eye is kind of messed up a little bit and it's a little lower, but whatever. But my vision isn't really that good. And then I woke up on the stretcher and, you know, after you get knocked out, you try moving everything. So I tried moving, you know, my toes, my fingers, just everything. And I noticed that I couldn't move my arm at all. And so I started screaming and freaking out. I can't move my arm. I can't move my arm. And the paramedic that was on top of me, his eyes widened and he put a neck brace over my neck and they rushed me to the hospital. Now I went to 3 different hospitals before I was finally diagnosed with brachial plexus injury at Children's Medical Center. They tried telling me, the first one said that I had a dislocated shoulder, which made no sense. The second one said that I had a pinched nerve. And then the third one said that I had a pinched nerve in my collarbone, which again made no sense at all. Because at least with a pinched nerve, you'd be able to move and feel things. Mm-hmm. So they took me to Children's and that's where I got diagnosed. I was in there for quite a bit, a few months. And then when I finally got released, my dad and I went out to go get some dinner with my mom and my grandpa who are following behind us in a truck. And me and my dad were in this huge lifted Ford driving down the freeway. And my mom called since she was driving right behind us and said, hey, you're going to want to move over. This guy's driving crazy behind you. And during this time, I was starting to gain some bicep muscle back. And so I was in the passenger seat with my dad. And so we move over into the slow lane and the drunk driver moves out, in, out. And then once he goes back in, he nicks our back tire. And my dad instantly loses control and tries overcorrecting. And we flipped multiple times in our truck. And so I was tossed around in there. And so was my dad. And we slid for about a good 1.5 to 2 miles on the roof of our truck. And so everything that I was gaining back bicep wise, I instantly lost, which kind of brought me back down to zero.
That is deep. Wow. So.
Yeah.
So from there, so what happened from there? Cause I never heard this story from you. So this is, breaks my heart.
Yeah. Oh no, you're all good.
You're in it now.
Obviously it's a sad story. It's a deep story. It's, for being 12 years old, it was traumatic, especially being a 12-year-old girl that is starting to transition into being a woman. Like I started thinking after time went on, like, how am I going to do my hair? How am I going to do my makeup? Am I going to make a good mom? As crazy as it sounds, it's like, are boys even going to like me? Like, are they going to like a girl with one arm? So just all these different things started coming through my head. And basically what really started me really attacking life was, I'd say about 3-4 months into my disability. Obviously I wasn't able to go to school because I was trying to figure out, how am I going to live life? How am I going to be quote unquote disabled? And how am I going to do things? So I was figuring things out fresh out of the box with all this. And I went back to school and I was sitting there and I was still trying to figure out how to write because I was right-hand dominant. And so now I'm having to learn how to write with being left hand. And I was sitting there trying to write and my teachers requested some of my really good friends to write my homework and stuff for me. And I remember sitting at a desk in, I think it was my science class, and my best friend at the time was writing my homework for me. And this was after a week or so of her doing this. And she looked at me and she said, this is so stupid. I shouldn't have to write for you. Figure this out. But she said it in, you know, a very sixth grader, sassy, tone, but that's fine. You know, we were in sixth grade. You don't really know manners that much. Yeah. And like what's okay and what's not okay to say to somebody. So it's totally fine. But in that moment, I was so angry. I was like, she's right. Why can't I do this by myself? And that really set my determination for really just attacking life and figuring out how to do things. So basically in high school and middle school, I tried out for absolutely everything. I was on the tennis team. I did cheer. I did cross country. I was in choir. I was in AP art classes. I retaught myself how to draw because I really love art. I was in pretty much absolutely everything you could think of except for band, because you can't play an instrument with one hand. I couldn't find an instrument to play. I literally tried. I was like, maybe I can try the flute. I don't know. But I was trying all these sports to find the fill that motocross took away. I felt like a part of me was gone because motocross was who I was. It was my identifier, say to speak. Everybody knew me as the motocross girl, the racer. And I loved that. I pride myself on that because I'm a speed freak. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was just super cool. And during that time, you know, women weren't really applauded for doing things like that. So I don't know. It kind of boosted my pride, I guess you'd say. But losing that identity and losing who I was, I think, the most hardest part, because I was trying to figure out what else was I going to do. So I was off the bike for about 7 years. And then I went to college at Dallas Baptist University. And I started going to the track again, hanging out, just watching my friends ride. Just being in that environment really helped. It was really therapeutic for me, just being in that environment in general, just not even doing it, just being there at the track. But obviously after some time, my gears started turning and I was like, you know what? I want to get back into this really bad. And so at the time, my friend Connor was like, hey, why don't we just rig up a pit bike, like something for you to ride around the pits. Absolutely no intention of me ever racing or doing anything adaptively again. Just something to ride around the pits.
Running around for fun.
Okay.
So for some people, for the guests may not know what a pit bike is. Maybe you kind of explain what that is. Because, you know, a pit bike,
yeah,
I kind of grew up a little bit around motorcycles, so I know what that is. But, you know, a lot of people may not know what a pit bike is exactly.
Yeah. So a pit bike is literally a mini dirt bike that's about the size of a 50 or 65. Like usually you'd see like a little kid riding around it. But at the track, you'll see a lot of the dads, like the moto dads, sitting on the pit bike and chasing their kids on the edges of the track, making sure that they're doing everything they're supposed to be doing properly. So that's a pit bike. It's just a mini dirt bike. Very, very, very small. I think it's only a three or four speed, very tiny motor. So, but they're a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun, terrible suspension, but a lot of fun just to cruise around on. Yep. So my friend Connor was like, why don't we just switch the throttle over to the left side? I was like, oh, perfect, because it doesn't have a clutch lever, and we were just able to move the front brake over to the left side, and everything would be fine for me to ride. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. So we moved the throttle over to the left side and get everything working on the left-handed side. But again, since the pit bike doesn't have much to move, since it's not an actual big-sized bike, that's really all we had to do. And I sat on the bike, and the throttle rolls forward rather than regular. We didn't see much need in switching the throttle cables. So I sat on the bike, it rolled forward. I looped out the bike first because I was like, oh, this is very weird. And so I looped it out and then I picked it up, got on it. And there was this little pit bike track that was right behind us where we were parked. And I was like, okay, you guys go have fun. I'm going to go like cruise around on this and like just get a feel for it. So I get on the pit bike track. I was there for probably about 2-3 hours, and the only time that I stopped was just to put more gas in the tank. But that little pit bike track pretty much retaught me how to ride, and I was so freaking happy. And so I took that bike, and the big track is where like the 250s and the 450s were, and those are just big bikes, lots and lots of power, 5 speeds, just, you know, 250cc, 450cc, and really aggressive, fast guys that are out there riding. And I don't know why, but I thought in my head, you know, it'd be a good idea to take this pit bike out onto this track with all these other way bigger bikes that are flying, and I'm just going to go trail on the side. And so I get on this big bike track and I just start riding around, and I spend the entire day on there, literally the entire day. I did not get off that track, like I said, only to get gas. And I was having the best time of my life. And so from that point, I was going to the track on the weekends riding this pit bike. And this was about the time that Facebook was like, you know, starting to really blow up. This was back in like 13 or 14. Yeah, because I graduated in 13. So yeah, around that time. And there was a photographer that was out there that was taking like a ton of pictures, and he took a picture of me and he decided to post it on Facebook. And when he posted on Facebook, who I'm friends with my parents, I was like, great. Now I have to tell my family that I'm riding dirt bikes again. This is wonderful. So I sat them down and I was like, hey, just so you know you're going to see this, but there's a picture of me on Facebook riding again, but just wanted to let you know, this is what's going on. I'm being safe. I'm wearing my helmet. I'm doing all the right things. I'm riding in my size practice. But I'm very, very happy. Like, this has boosted my mental health. I feel like I'm back where I belong. Like, this really, truly makes me happy. If you support it, great. If you don't, I understand. All good. And my parents looked at me and they're like, you're crazy. And my dad went out to the track with me a little shortly after that, and he watched me ride, and he was like, you know, this is super dangerous. I don't support this. I don't know why you're doing this. So good luck, whatever, this is all you. And I was like, okay, yeah, I understand. And then a few months later, my dad ends up sitting me down, and he's like, I know you. Once you get your mind to something, you do it. And if you're going to actually really fully do this, I want to make sure you have the best equipment and that you're just 100% safe, because I don't want to see you get super hurt again. I was like, okay, so what does that mean? So he helped me buy my 150. We went half and half. And what's great about Texas is that, you know, they like certain things. So my dad was able to throw down some cash and trade some other stuff, which was pretty great. And I got my bike and we rigged it up. We got a Recluse clutch in there, so all I have to do is dry shift. And then, and not even use the clutch lever at all, which is awesome.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Highly recommend it. Really,
I was wondering how you have all the controls on one side, you know, from the brake, the clutch, yes, the throttles. Like, that's a lot of controls for one, to each riding and hitting jumps. So you have a clutch. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So the Recluse clutch is great because you don't have to use the clutch lever at all. So the clutch lever is just hanging out on the right side of my handlebar. And then we have the front brake on the left. And again, the throttle, which is just upside down and it rolls forward. And again, I can switch the throttle cables to make it work regular. But what I like about it rolling forward and being different than other bikes is that if I'm going over braking bumps or a whoop section or something where it's just where I have to stand up and lean back, I'm not going to get whiskey throttle. I have a lot more control over with my bike with it actually rolling forward. And then last thing, I have a steering stabilizer that's underneath my handlebar, so it keeps my steering a little bit stiffer. So whenever the track starts getting really rough, I'll just turn it up a little bit, and that keeps my steering pretty fairly straight for the most part. It's a little tougher to turn in corners, but it does help me keep better control of my bike. So that helps tremendously. And I started riding again back before all these adaptive sports blew up. Adaptive sports have really blown up, I'd say probably in the last four or five years, especially in the last two, they've really blown up. But that's when things really started taking off. So I just started racing again, which is funny because I told my dad that I had no intentions of racing, but then 3 months later I was at my first race. So, you know, that's me though.
How's that, you know, you racing just regular class. So you're racing other people. So how's that, and how's that like, you know, just showing up to the line, like, oh, what's going on here? How's, how you been kind of navigating that?
Yeah. So I race in what, in the adaptive world, what we call fully abled classes. So just people that have no disabilities. Mm-hmm. So, but again, back when I started racing, adaptive stuff wasn't a thing yet. So yeah, I'd pull up to the line and I would race in the women's class and the super mini because of my bike size is a 150cc. So I'd race super mini open. Now super mini is like 85s and 150s, but it's usually for kids that are like around 10, like 7 to 10 years old, like super young little kids. And I'm over here pulling up and I've just turned like 18, 19 years old. I'm like, what's up, guys? So it's just kind of funny. But racing in fully abled classes, I have an insane amount of support from the moto community. That's actually one thing that I absolutely love about moto is that you, when you get in this sport, you're also adopting a huge family, like a huge community of people that just really genuinely care about you. And the support is just insane. So whenever I pulled up on the line for just my first race, like this one girl looked at me and she looked at my arm that's in my sling because I wear my sling when I ride because it keeps my arm protected since I can't feel it if I fall in case if I break something or whatever, it's just close to my body. So it helps prevent injuries. But this girl looked at me and she looked at my bike and then looked at my brace and she just looked at me and gave me a fist bump. I was like, oh, cool. So I've definitely gotten a lot of respect in the moto community. And actually, especially over the last 2 years, a lot of people have reached out, you know, telling me about their stories and their disabilities and how they got hurt racing or just how they had like a car accident and so many different things. And they asked me, what's my opinion of them getting back on the bike? And I always encourage it. I'm like, yes, get back into riding. These are all the parts that I recommend. So I always tell them my bike setup and really help encourage them, just telling them that, hey, you might be disabled, but that doesn't mean that you can't stop doing things. It just means you're going to be doing things differently and that's okay. Yeah. So just encouraging them that there is that possibility and whether they want to do it or not is completely up to them. And if they choose not to, totally cool. Cause you know, racing isn't for everybody, but yeah, I think, you know, my parents just love to tell me that, you know, with racing and snowboarding and surfing, I wouldn't say surfing as much, just with all the sports that I do, if I break my good arm, I'm kind of screwed because I don't have a prosthetic that I can put on my bad arm and be on quote unquote back to normal, I guess. Mm-hmm. Because it's just a dead limb that hangs there that I can't do anything with. It just stays. And doesn't do anything. So that's always kind of in the back of my mind. That kind of scares me a little bit. It's like, okay, I'm doing all these cool things, but if I go out and I get hurt, I'm putting myself in a bad situation because I live in a state by myself. I don't have any family out here. I only have like 2 friends because it's very hard for me to make friends where I live. So I'm like, if I get hurt and I can't be mobile or I can't brush my teeth or eat food or go to the bathroom, like I'm kind of screwed because I have nobody out here. So there's a lot of risk with it. And I think just going back to the sport that took away my arm has just been the best decision I've ever made. Because if I didn't get back into motocross, I wouldn't be in all these action sports that I'm in now. And my dream of becoming a professional motocross racer when I was 16, I'm living that dream now just in a much cooler way than I ever would have thought of. So there was actually a lot of positives that came in out of this, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's incredible. Then when you're talking about a lot of the cooler ways, what do you mean by that? Because it sounds like, you know, you've been doing a lot of training, looks like for snowboarding. Is that one of the cooler ways you're talking about?
Yeah. Just because since I got back into, so when I got back into racing, I was racing for probably about a year or two, and I got this invite to race in this motorsport adaptive championship, and it was only 3 races. They had no women that were competing, but there were men in wheelchairs, like the legendary Doug Henry was going to be a part of it. Mike Schultz, who is a phenomenal, like one of the most decorated X Games athlete out there, and just so many more awesome adaptive racers, they asked me to be a part of the championship race series because they couldn't find any other females that were doing it. And I was like, yeah, of course I'd love to. So I went to all three of the races and had the time of my life. But through that, since I met Mike Schultz, he was like, hey, do you snowboard? I was like, actually, I do. And he said, well, you should look up adaptive action sports in Copper Mountain and look up this guy named Dan Gale and his wife, Amy Purdy. And I was like, okay, yeah, totally. So I reached out to them, came out here a few times, trained with them, got a feel for the team and the office and everything. And Dan looked at me and was like, hey, like, you have this really awesome opportunity. The Paralympics for the U.S. team has never had an upper limb adaptive female compete before. And they actually don't really have an upper limb class for females because they haven't had enough females to show up at the competitions and really create a class for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So he said, you have a really cool opportunity to pioneer this for the Paralympics. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, let's do it. So a lot of things happened in my personal life about 3 years ago where I pretty much lost everything. Lot of stuff happened, but and long story short, Texas just became very toxic for me. And I didn't have any place to live. So I was living out of my truck for a few months. And I came up to Colorado just to escape. And that's when my coach was telling me, like, hey, you should really attack this head on. And I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to stay then. Like, I don't have anything to go back to. So I ended up staying here. And, you know, he housed me for a little bit and let me get on my feet, which was really awesome of him and his wife, Amy. And started training with them full time. And slowly, like over the past 2 years of me, 2 or 3 years of me really doing this full time, the upper limb class is really starting to grow now to where we're actually one of the biggest classes in the Paralympics. So we're really fighting to get that class as a category. And again, I'm going to be the first female to represent the United States if they choose to take me, because it is a choosing process. So if they choose to take me, I'll be the first one, which is awesome, and be able to create and pave that way for other future females and give them more opportunities. So it's just really incredible to think that if I didn't touch my dirt bike, I wouldn't be creating this whole category in the Paralympics, which is like the biggest competition in the world. So just taking a step in faith and knowing who I was and what my passion was, and not listening to my parents, not listening to my friends, not listening to my teachers, like just doing what I knew made me happy. Because at the end of the day, if I was to die today, I'm going to die a happy woman because I'm doing everything that I love, despite what anybody else says, because I don't care about any other's opinion. It's my disability. It's my life. I'm going to take control of it. So that's exactly my outlook, and that's how I've been going about it. But yeah, going, so just doing all this and snowboarding has, I'm now sponsored by Burton, which I never thought I'd ever be sponsored by. That was my first snowboard when I was 4. And I freaked out when I got sponsored by them. I called my mom and I was like, you'll never believe who my sponsor is. She's like, who? I was like, Burton. She's like, no way. So she's super supportive of it, because now I get her free snowboards and hook my little sister up. So it's awesome. So that's been really, really cool. But I've been traveling the world snowboarding. I've been to almost just about every country, which has just been awesome. And through that, I've been able to get into surfing. And then surfing has led to skating. And it's just all these different people that I'm meeting and networking through all these different sports, because every adaptive athlete does another sport. Not an adaptive athlete doesn't just stick to one. They usually do multiple. So it's really cool. Just all the people that I've been able to meet, all the connections, all the support. I'm definitely living my dream that I've had my entire childhood. And I know that if I was to go back to four or five-year-old me and be like, hey, just so you know, this is going to happen, but you're going to have really cool results, keep with it, I probably would have peed myself. So It's been a lot of fun, and I'm really excited to see what else is going to come up out of it. And yeah, it's going to be super rad.
That is super rad, and quite a story. You know, this that you've been kind of going through and kind of sharing with us, and awesome that you can kind of sharing with us all those details of it. And so yeah, you're kind of talking about, you really didn't listen to anyone. Like, yo, I'm just going to go do this. You know, even your parents say, hey, well, dangerous, whatever, I'm going to go for it, or all these different things. So
yeah,
how, you know, what do you even, you know, as, how do you kind of stay inspired to all this, even getting back on the motorcycle and like relearning how to do things of riding? What kind of kept you driving through and really staying motivated to push yourself through all of it? I know, you know, it's not an easy process for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So in the very beginning, I got back on the bike because I knew it would make me happy. And I really wanted, ever since I was little, I've always really enjoyed proving people wrong. I hate to say it. I'm the type of person, I can own my mistakes. I have no shame, but I love being right. And I think that's a lot of people, you know?
Yep.
So I really enjoy proving people wrong. And especially just when the doctors were just sitting there and just telling me all these things that I wouldn't be able to do and the things that I was going to need help with. And, you know, my mom, she even kind of was like, you know, there's only certain things you can do. And same with my dad. But in their defense, they were looking out for their child. They weren't being mean. They were just looking out for me and what was going to be best for me, because they wanted me to be safe, protected, out of harm's way. So I completely understand that as an adult. But whenever I was a little kid, I was like, screw you guys, I'm going to go do this and do what makes me happy anyways, whether you support it or not. And so I really like proving people wrong. And I'm also, I don't know, have you heard of what an anagram is?
An anagram?
Maybe.
I've heard of it. Don't know the full details of it, though. It's break it down for us.
An anagram is just a personality type. It's like this assessment that you take. But it's been blowing up in like all over social media, I guess.
Yeah, other ones like 16 personalities and some other ones. I haven't done the anagram one. You should check that one out.
Yeah, the anagram is incredibly spot on. So I'm an anagram 3, which basically just means an achiever. So I think that's also where I get my drive, is that I base my value off of my achievements. So if I'm not out there achieving something, I get really hard on myself. That's not healthy. That's not okay. But that's just my personality type. So I always strive to be the absolute best. I'm very competitive. But again, that really also goes back to me just starting racing at a very young age. Like I touched a dirt bike at 4 years old. And my best friend at the time, James, he got a dirt bike. And whenever he sat on that bike, I looked at him. I was like, bet I can beat you to the top of the hill. So I've always been competitive. But again, whenever I got back on the bike, I had absolutely no intention of inspiring anybody. I had no intention of making this a bigger thing. I literally got on the bike because it's what I loved doing. And then all this just came after it. So shaping, it's just really interesting to see how it's been shaped over the past few years and how I have actually really helped a lot of people. So I think that's the most rewarding part of all of this, is just the people I've been able to help, to show them that their only limit is themselves. And you shouldn't let anybody else in this world, whether it's your parents, your doctors, your coworkers, your spouse, nobody should ever tell you that you cannot do something, ever. It's just belittling. No matter what the circumstance, there's always a way to figure things out. There's guys in wheelchairs that are racing dirt bikes. Explain that. Like, that's insane. My bike setup is cool, but theirs is so sick and so intricate and so detailed. And the way that they've made it safe for them, though, like Doug Henry has a cage that goes over the top of his bike. So if he falls, he rolls over instead of it actually hitting him. So just all, it's fabricated. Like, you can't just go to the store and buy one. He made that, or one of his friends did. But just all these different ways that people have gone out to succeed at things there's literally just no excuse for you to not be able to do something that you want to do.
That is true. And that is no excuse for sure. And you just kind of, you get creative, kind of like you're saying, like he made his own cage and you kind of moved your brake over and got a clutchless system, or and just kind of found creative ways to the kind of common method. So, you know, what is, so kind of going through this journey is, you know, you kind of talked about you've been helping others and inspire them. That was kind of your intent. You just kind of went out this to have fun. So what's kind of been some typical questions you get from individuals that they come to you, and how do you kind of answer them? So my goal is kind of take some of these common questions you may get. You know, it takes a lot of courage to go up to and ask someone a question. So my goal is kind of have you share maybe a couple of questions you have often that you get, and that we can kind of share those questions and answers that for the ones that, you know, maybe they're listening in, they don't, the first time they heard about you and they go, oh, so what's kind of a common question you get?
I would definitely say first is, what's my story? A lot of people, when they see me riding or walking around the pits with my brace on, they're like, oh, broken collarbone? I'm like, I wish. So that's definitely the most popular one. Second is, what's my bike setup? People always want to see how my bike works, what I did to make it work, things like that. And then those two, I would say, is the absolute most popular. Other questions are just, how do you do X, Y, and Z? Or kind of like what you said, what keeps you motivated? What keeps you inspired? But that's pretty much about it. Just really, what's my story and how is my bike set up? That's my most popular for sure.
Got it. Well, those are good questions. And we've already tackled those pretty good. So I'm glad we're covering our bases with that for everyone. So you don't, but one other question I kind of like is, you know, life hacks, you know, a lot of, kind of my goal of the podcast was, what's some kind of tricks and tips that you may do on a daily basis that are not really involved like in your sports exactly? So do you have like any little tricks and methods that you've done? You only have one, you know, you only have one dominant hand arm now. So you kind of, you know, So have you kind of came up with any cool tricks that you kind of adapted throughout your daily life that you may want to share with us?
Yeah. So obviously I'm a chick. I got to put my hair up, you know, especially if I'm working out or whatever I'm doing. I just like to have my hair back sometimes. So I use a doorknob. I put my ponytail holder rubber band around the doorknob. I lean my head back against it and I put my hand through the rubber band, pull my hair through, and then I use my fingers to twist it up and then pull my hair through again. So it's never like the tightest ponytail, but it gets my hair back and it does the job. For
you got a round doorknob or a handle doorknob?
I typically really like the handle doorknobs because it doesn't slip off as easily. And if it does slip, it gets on the handle. But if it slips off on a ball doorknob, then it slips off and then you have to start all over. But yes, I like the handle doorknob.
How did you come up with the idea? I'm trying to visualize this. So how did you come up with the idea of, like, hey, I'm going to use a doorknob for this?
Yeah, so remember when I said back in high school, I pretty much tried out for everything. Well, cross country, I had to wake up at 4:30 in the morning to be at school by 5 to go run like 3 to 6 miles in the morning. Dumbest thing that I've ever done. Don't know why I decided to do that. But there were some times that my mom wasn't at home. She would usually leave pretty early or she was still asleep and I didn't want to wake her up. And so I just looked at the doorknob and I was like, I could use this. So I just slapped the rubber band on there and just figured it out as I went. Because also I knew that my mom wasn't going to be around and she wasn't going to live with me in my 20s to do my hair. So like I had to figure out one way or another. So yeah, I just looked at the doorknob and I was like, this could work. And I just figured it out from there and made it happen.
That's a good one. It's a good trick. I need to get now. I need to get a video of this so we can actually visualize how this actually works.
And then Do you remember the video game Rock Band and Guitar Hero?
Yep.
Yeah, those were super fun. So that was also back when I was younger, when those games started coming out, and my friends would go upstairs and they would play it, and I would just sit there and I'd watch how everything worked, you know, with the strumming on your fingers and then strumming on the actual bass of the guitar. So I was like, you know, how could I play this? Because I was feeling a little left out. So I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, if I get, you know, those real fuzzy, I don't know how to explain them, but you know the real fuzzy socks that you usually get at Christmas that has like the external super fuzziness, like you can slide on wood floors on them and stuff?
Yep.
They're like very...
The big thick ones.
Yes. They're very thick, but the external, they have like really fuzzy stuff on the outside. But I picked up a few of those socks and I was like, you know, I could just lay the guitar on the ground, play the top keys like a piano, and then I'll strum with my toe. So that's what I ended up doing. And then I ended up becoming expert on it. And then for like Call of Duty and Mario Kart, just because I love video games, I use my knees. I put the controller in between my knees and like I'll lean up the controller on my knee for the gas, and then I'll twist it and then do the controls and stuff with my thumb as regular. Or I'll put it on the ground and use my toe. So I use my feet a lot.
That's good. And using your feet. Again, visuals are key for these things. We need to get some videos. Now you need to hook us up with some video clips of how you do this. So we can drop them in so people can see it. So now we got a fun project.
I actually do have a video of me playing Guitar Hero on my Instagram.
Oh, sweet. I can track that one down. The door one's pretty cool as well. So I like the how you can the door's a nice concept because typically anywhere you go, you're gonna have access to a door, so you won't forget your, you know, exactly. It's not like you show up someone, oh, there's, I'm in a hotel room or someone's house and all the doors are gone. Typically,
you might
be able to find a door, so pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Kind of continuing, kind of getting towards the end here for us, and you know, the stories that you share, the insights have been incredible and super inspirational, especially how you kind of be going through. So you're kind of working on your next, your goals coming up already, it looks like. You know, the winter's coming up, it's currently, it's coming soon. So what's your kind of goals for the summer, you know, winter, you know, with the snowboarding and training, how's that going to be looking?
Yeah, so going back to training full-time, doing the world circuit again, but, you know, in light of COVID, they're taking a lot of precautions and a lot of things are set in place where we will be tested on site and lots of sanitation and X amount of people. Like, if you're traveling with your team, then you have to room with your team. Well, it's always been that way anyways, but they're just very strict about, like, where we can eat, how many people can be like in the eating rooms. So it's gonna be really interesting to see how all this is gonna be affected by COVID. So especially traveling internationally. So it's gonna be interesting. But obviously, you know, my goal is to get a crystal globe at the end of the year, which just means I'm the best in the world. And I've been working my way towards that. So my skills have definitely gotten a lot better. So I'm really excited to see. And then we have the Paralympics, which is going to be next season. So this season is just really important to really crack down and get a lot of work in and hit every competition possible and just get as much practice on courses and all that. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. I love traveling with my team. I'm pretty much the only chick as of right now. So they're really like my brothers. Like I said, since I'm in Colorado by myself, they really truly are my family. So like my coach Dan, I call him Uncle Dan, and his wife Aunt Amy, because I really do look at them as family. And my teammate Alex, Zach, Joe, all of them, they're super great people. So it's always a good time. But those are my goals, to get a crystal globe, get as prepared for the Paralympics of next season, and just keep chugging away just for that on snowboarding specifically.
Awesome. And hope you get that award. That'd be awesome. Be the number one. That'd be a great, you are competitive, yeah. You said, so bet yeah. You can do it. So besides
100%.
That, is there anything else out there? You know, any questions I should have asked that we didn't include?
I think the only thing that I would just like to mention is just, you know, number one, if you see somebody parked in a handicap sign that doesn't look handicapped, don't be mean to them. A lot of people have disabilities that are hidden that legitimately make them handicapped and make them disabled. So don't be rude to people that park in handicapped spots. I've had a lot of rude people come up to me and be like, you know, that's for disabled people, right? And I just show them my arm, like, yeah, and my arm's paralyzed. Like, I literally can't use a limb. Like, yes, I'm aware what this is for. Thank you for being concerned. When it's none of your business anyways, like, just go on about your day. Why stop? And then just the second thing too, people that have paralysis, depending on how they acquired that paralysis, whether it was avulsion of the nerves, like mine were ripped out of my spine, or if they were stretched, no matter what, you have this thing called neuropathy pain, where it basically feels like you're being electrocuted 24/7. And mine is the most severe because it was literally ripped out of my spinal cord, which they call avulsed. And with avulsion, you don't have those nerves that are connected to your spinal cord. So it sends the most powerful signals trying to find their way back or trying to regenerate. So my nerve pain has gotten so bad now where about per month I have 2 blackouts because my body can't handle the pain that I go through. And I just started talking about this on my social media platform recently. And it's crazy all the people that have nerve injuries that go through neuropathy pain, but they don't talk about it. And I think it's important just to mention because, you know, you never know who's going through that because that is so hidden. You can't see it. But you can tell when a person's severely in pain, but it's just something that you can't see. And so just talking about it and letting people know, whoever else is going through it, that they're not alone. And unfortunately it is normal, but everybody experiences it at different extremities than other people. So again, just starting that conversation and just throwing it out there to be like, you're not alone. And a lot of people go through it. Because after I've been talking about it on my social media, I've had tons of messages from so many different people all around the world. They're like, hey, thanks for bringing this up. I go through it too. So just building that community, that really supports, you know, because in days where I'm crying and I can't leave my bed and I'm just stuck and I feel helpless and I just feel trapped in my body, it does feel a little better knowing that I'm not the only person going through it. So I think that's, like I said, just important to mention.
They're both great mentions to include. You mentioned, you know, the community part as well, just how you can get more involved in the community. And when you talk about the community, how can individuals connect with you? So we're and kind of joining that conversation because, you know, that's the whole goal of our podcast is really just connecting individuals, sharing stories, and also kind of building this conversation of hard topics that you just talked about, especially at the end here, you know, as if, you know, you're not feeling like, oh, you actually ask those questions. So how can the audience find and connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm very active on my Instagram, which is at Kiana, K-I-A-N-A, Clay, C-L-A-Y, 23, on Instagram. That's one that I'm the absolute most active on, or you can look me up on Facebook on my athlete page where I post everything that I post on my Instagram if you don't have an Instagram, which is also Kiana Clay 23. I also recently started a YouTube channel, which is just kind of, I don't know, just something for fun. I post a lot of my travels and little tips and tricks and everything on there. And that too is also Kiana Clay 23. So all my usernames are the same on all my platforms, but those are my 3 platforms that I really am active on. Everything else I don't do. I'm I'm not into TikTok.
TikTok yet.
The what?
You're not on TikTok.
No, I'm not on TikTok. That's one I can't get into that. But that's just me personally, and that's totally year. Okay. I have a lot of friends that love it, and that's great.
Yeah, next year you'll be talking. Yeah, it's on TikTok. So.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you for Kiana having you on the Socket with us. It's been an incredible story, kind of going through your journey and kind of where you're going. So it's been an awesome time. And
yeah, thank you for having me.
And anytime, and hope to may have you on here again, kind of talk more about how your adventure goes this winter, and hope you're the best. So enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much, you too.